This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, March 2019 examination in English as a second language. Paper 3. Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Where did the girl's family go camping? B. What caused the family some problems on the camping trip?
How did the camping trip with your family go?
Quite well, actually. We were planning to go to the mountains because we'd always wanted to do that. We ended up going to a lake instead. It was so peaceful. There's a forest we're interested in visiting, so we might check that out next time, because it'd be a good place to camp too.
So did everything go well?
To be honest, I'm always slightly worried about the weather. It was fine though. The little cooker was new and should have worked, but we struggled with it. Never mind, at least the tents were okay. Putting them up can be a problem sometimes.
How did the camping trip with your family go?
Quite well, actually. We were planning to go to the mountains because we'd always wanted to do that. We ended up going to a lake instead. It was so peaceful. There's a forest we're interested in visiting, so we might check that out next time, because it'd be a good place to camp too.
So did everything go well?
To be honest, I'm always slightly worried about the weather. It was fine though. The little cooker was new and should have worked, but we struggled with it. Never mind, at least the tents were okay. Putting them up can be a problem sometimes.
Question 2. A. Which type of photograph did the man like most at the exhibition? B. What does the man criticise about the exhibition?
With us today is Dan Bennett, who's been to a new photographic exhibition.
Thanks, Lisa. The exhibition of photographs by Eric Rose is very impressive. Over the years, he's been praised for his highly unusual portraits. The exhibition certainly highlights his talent in that area. I was particularly struck by the shots of buildings, which for me are outstanding, even finer than his natural landscapes. The exhibition has some faults, however. The maps were confusing. Some critics thought the lighting was all wrong, but it looked okay to me. And the souvenir shop wasn't as bad as some visitors claimed.
With us today is Dan Bennett, who's been to a new photographic exhibition.
Thanks, Lisa. The exhibition of photographs by Eric Rose is very impressive. Over the years, he's been praised for his highly unusual portraits. The exhibition certainly highlights his talent in that area. I was particularly struck by the shots of buildings, which for me are outstanding, even finer than his natural landscapes. The exhibition has some faults, however. The maps were confusing. Some critics thought the lighting was all wrong, but it looked okay to me. And the souvenir shop wasn't as bad as some visitors claimed.
Question 3. A. How does the man describe the teacher on his creative writing course? B. What did the man find easiest to write?
How did your creative writing course go?
Okay, thanks. I hoped I'd have an inspiring teacher. My ideal teacher would be someone imaginative and kind. He turned out to be quite strict. I really had to work hard.
Well, I think it was good he was so serious. Did you manage to write a story?
Just about. I reckoned believable characters would be hard to create, and I was right. A good ending wasn't so tricky, though. My teacher said people often have problems writing natural dialogue. I was so pleased when he said mine was very strong, because it took me ages to do.
How did your creative writing course go?
Okay, thanks. I hoped I'd have an inspiring teacher. My ideal teacher would be someone imaginative and kind. He turned out to be quite strict. I really had to work hard.
Well, I think it was good he was so serious. Did you manage to write a story?
Just about. I reckoned believable characters would be hard to create, and I was right. A good ending wasn't so tricky, though. My teacher said people often have problems writing natural dialogue. I was so pleased when he said mine was very strong, because it took me ages to do.
Question 4. A. What does the teacher recommend the students should avoid in their presentations? B. What does the teacher think might be difficult for the students?
I'd like to give you some advice on the presentations you're giving to the class next week. You won't be surprised to hear that I think you should mainly use facts and figures. You can include important dates too. You may think a presentation is also about expressing personal opinions, and that's not always a bad thing. I'm really not keen on you including jokes. Since we've already discussed choosing the topic in detail, this is unlikely to be an issue. Organising the content will probably be a challenge, but will be excellent practice. I'd like to give you some advice on the presentations you're giving to the class next week. You won't be surprised to hear that I think you should mainly use facts and figures. You can include important dates too. You may think a presentation is also about expressing personal opinions, and that's not always a bad thing. I'm really not keen on you including jokes. Since we've already discussed choosing the topic in detail, this is unlikely to be an issue. Organising the content will probably be a challenge, but will be excellent practice.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a talk given by a young man called Martin Bowerman, who is interested in mountain biking. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
My name's Martin Bowerman, and I'm going to tell you about my free time activity, mountain biking. I never actually attended an introductory course when I started out, so without that, I had to take things slowly at first. Many beginners go to mountain biking centers, and so did I. I began with easy rides, and only later took on bigger challenges. The professionals focus on timing as part of their training, but that wouldn't be appropriate for someone new to the sport. I started by buying a secondhand bike, which was very cheap. But within a month, there were a few problems with it, so I took it to a bike shop. They managed to fix the gears and tighten up the brakes, but they had to put new tires on. It all turned out to be quite expensive. It's probably better to buy a new bike to begin with. Riders require many qualities and skills. I was sure that fitness would be important, and luckily I was already quite strong and athletic. Balance is another key skill and one that hasn't caused me many problems so far. I now know that confidence is something that's important, which only came to me with time and practice. A lot of equipment is available if someone is serious about the sport. There's always the possibility of a breakdown, so a toolbox is a must, and I had a good one already. I had to invest in a backpack to carry things like water bottles. No rider likes to believe they'll have an accident, but if you're responsible, you take a medical kit. A friend gave me one as a present, so I was well equipped. Everyone has to wear protective clothing. This includes body armor, which is not just for more advanced riders doing really technically difficult rides, but for everyone. I expected to have a helmet, of course, and special gloves. It's not a key requirement, but many riders have hiking boots, too. Initially, I wasn't keen, but now I always put them on. I took part in an amateur competition a few weeks ago. The route we took was very hard and complicated. Getting lost was a real problem. It happened a few times, which made me feel quite irritated. Some riders were hitting rocks all the time, though I was fine, and I seemed to be much more careful than them. I was absolutely determined to avoid falling off. Many people criticize mountain biking, firstly because they worry about environmental protection and the damage it causes to mountainsides. However, I'm not convinced that my sport does more damage than people doing other activities there. Secondly, it can be dangerous, so it's essential that we consider risk management. This is about making sure the possibility of suffering some sort of injury is reduced to a minimum. So far, I've been doing cross-country mountain biking. There's also downhill riding, which is really thrilling, and also the most dangerous. I probably won't attempt that just yet. What I'd like to have a go at is jumping. It looks so easy when people do it well, but actually, it's quite difficult. Mountain biking is a great hobby, and I'd recommend it to everyone.
Now you will hear the talk again.
My name's Martin Bowerman, and I'm going to tell you about my free time activity, mountain biking. I never actually attended an introductory course when I started out, so without that, I had to take things slowly at first. Many beginners go to mountain biking centers, and so did I. I began with easy rides, and only later took on bigger challenges. The professionals focus on timing as part of their training, but that wouldn't be appropriate for someone new to the sport. I started by buying a second-hand bike, which was very cheap, but within a month, there were a few problems with it, so I took it to a bike shop. They managed to fix the gears and tighten up the brakes, but they had to put new tires on. It all turned out to be quite expensive. It's probably better to buy a new bike to begin with. Riders require many qualities and skills. I was sure that fitness would be important, and luckily I was already quite strong and athletic. Balance is another key skill and one that hasn't caused me many problems so far. I now know that confidence is something that's important, which only came to me with time and practice. A lot of equipment is available if someone is serious about the sport. There's always the possibility of a breakdown, so a toolbox is a must. And I had a good one already. I had to invest in a backpack to carry things like water bottles. No rider likes to believe they'll have an accident, but if you're responsible, you take a medical kit. A friend gave me one as a present, so I was well equipped. Everyone has to wear protective clothing. This includes body armor, which is not just for more advanced riders doing really technically difficult rides, but for everyone. I expected to have a helmet, of course, and special gloves. It's not a key requirement, but many riders have hiking boots, too. Initially, I wasn't keen, but now I always put them on. I took part in an amateur competition a few weeks ago. The route we took was very hard and complicated. Getting lost was a real problem. It happened a few times, which made me feel quite irritated. Some riders were hitting rocks all the time, though I was fine, and I seemed to be much more careful than them. I was absolutely determined to avoid falling off. Many people criticize mountain biking, firstly because they worry about environmental protection and the damage it causes to mountainsides. However, I'm not convinced that my sport does more damage than people doing other activities there. Secondly, it can be dangerous, so it's essential that we consider risk management. This is about making sure the possibility of suffering some sort of injury is reduced to a minimum. So far, I've been doing cross-country mountain biking. There's also downhill riding, which is really thrilling, and also the most dangerous. I probably won't attempt that just yet. What I'd like to have a go at is jumping. It looks so easy when people do it well, but actually, it's quite difficult. Mountain biking is a great hobby, and I'd recommend it to everyone.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 students talking about their experiences of doing practical things. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
I put together a new desk the other day. Making furniture by following a set of complicated instructions is something even very practical people can find time-consuming and frustrating. It was certainly a challenge, but to my surprise it was fun. Right from the start I was absolutely convinced that I could do it. It was like solving a puzzle, and finding the solution was very satisfying actually. At one point I thought I'd done something terribly wrong. But it turned out that everything was fine.
Speaker 2.
I helped my mother repair a car engine. I'd studied a bit about car maintenance at college, and so I thought I'd feel fairly sure about what I was doing. In fact, I had no idea most of the time. We were in a freezing cold garage, and my mother kept using technical terms which I didn't always understand, so I wasn't very focused on what was going on, to be honest. I'd have found this quite fun and even rewarding if I was more knowledgeable and if it had been warmer.
Speaker 3.
I'd done a bit of painting before and it was quite a lot of fun. My parents wanted me to paint my whole bedroom last weekend. They thought I could probably do it, though I wasn't particularly keen. I was in a hurry to get the work done and should have cleaned the walls much more thoroughly before starting to paint. The end result was very disappointing. I can't blame anyone but myself, really, because I'd been given detailed instructions which I should have referred to more.
Speaker 4.
I helped my uncle build a wall. I'd done this before with my dad, and so I was very confident that I could handle things and didn't need much guidance. I was determined to show my uncle all the skills I'd acquired. I was hopeless, though, and there were a few little things I got wrong. My uncle kept calm and didn't get annoyed with me, fortunately. His instructions were very helpful. Sadly, I didn't always put what he said into practice.
Speaker 5.
I had to put up some new shelves. I'd been given good advice and information, which meant I was able to do it more quickly. At one point, I thought I drilled holes that were too big. I needn't have worried. Once the first two shelves were up, I started to feel more sure about what I was doing and much happier. I tend to be a bit careless at times, so I knew I had to concentrate.
Speaker 6.
I was helping my grandma replace a tap in the bathroom. I got really involved in what we were doing and time flew by. Sometimes in these situations I try to show that I'm a practical person who knows how to fix things. This time I was happy to listen to my grandma and learn. We occasionally looked at a book of instructions which was supposed to make things clear. Some parts didn't make sense and so, after all, we decided to call a professional plumber.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I put together a new desk the other day. Making furniture by following a set of complicated instructions is something even very practical people can find time-consuming and frustrating. It was certainly a challenge, but to my surprise it was fun. Right from the start I was absolutely convinced that I could do it. It was like solving a puzzle. And finding the solution was very satisfying, actually. At one point, I thought I'd done something terribly wrong, but it turned out that everything was fine.
Speaker 2.
I helped my mother repair a car engine. I'd studied a bit about car maintenance at college, and so I thought I'd feel fairly sure about what I was doing. In fact, I had no idea most of the time. We were in a freezing cold garage and my mother kept using technical terms which I didn't always understand, so I wasn't very focused on what was going on, to be honest. I'd have found this quite fun and even rewarding if I was more knowledgeable and if it had been warmer.
Speaker 3.
I'd done a bit of painting before and it was quite a lot of fun. My parents wanted me to paint my whole bedroom last weekend. They thought I could probably do it, though I wasn't particularly keen. I was in a hurry to get the work done and should have cleaned the walls much more thoroughly before starting to paint. The end result was very disappointing. I can't blame anyone but myself, really, because I'd been given detailed instructions which I should have referred to more.
Speaker 4.
I helped my uncle build a wall. I'd done this before with my dad, and so I was very confident that I could handle things and didn't need much guidance. I was determined to show my uncle all the skills I'd acquired. I was hopeless, though, and there were a few little things I got wrong. My uncle kept calm and didn't get annoyed with me, fortunately. His instructions were very helpful. Sadly, I didn't always put what he said into practice.
Speaker 5.
I had to put up some new shelves. I'd been given good advice and information, which meant I was able to do it more quickly. At one point, I thought I drilled holes that were too big. I needn't have worried. Once the first two shelves were up, I started to feel more sure about what I was doing and much happier. I tend to be a bit careless at times, so I knew I had to concentrate.
Speaker 6.
I was helping my grandma replace a tap in the bathroom. I got really involved in what we were doing and time flew by. Sometimes in these situations I try to show that I'm a practical person who knows how to fix things. This time I was happy to listen to my grandma and learn. We occasionally looked at a book of instructions which was supposed to make things clear. Some parts didn't make sense, and so, after all, we decided to call a professional plumber.
That is the end of exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear an interview with a woman called Alex Costello, who is the presenter of a children's science program. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Today we're talking to Alex Costello, who's the presenter of a popular science programme for children. How did your career start, Alex?
Well, my first job was as a researcher for a science programme. One day I took the place of one of the presenters who wasn't feeling too good. I only had to speak for about a minute, but it went so smoothly I was asked to do more presenting. Most people don't get such a great opportunity until they've tried contacting several TV stations. My story was different. By the way, I actually had a friend who directed documentaries. However, I just wouldn't have felt comfortable asking her to get me a job.
Do you think you had some natural talent for what you do?
I'm not sure. Trying to get across scientific concepts to an audience is a challenge even for a top scientist. So I had to learn how to do it. Working on any TV programme also involves cooperating in a team, and that wasn't my strength, at least not initially. It's not that I'm short of enthusiasm, though. People have never been in any doubt about how I feel about science.
How are science programmes for children different from the ones for adults?
The differences between the types of programme are quite noticeable. It's often said children's presenters make their programmes very amusing. Science programmes for adults are also quite humorous at times. In children's programmes, you don't want the audience to get bored, so you pack a lot of different demonstrations and experiments into half an hour. Children are naturally curious about everything, so I certainly don't exclude any topics at all.
Do you write the scripts for your programmes?
Well, I know many presenters who don't mind reading someone else's words. They feel fed up if they have to produce a script. I'm different. I write a script and hand it over to the producer, who then suggests changes. It's a shame when sometimes the script comes back and I can hardly recognise it, especially because my scripts aren't done in a rush.
Do you remember your first TV show as the main presenter?
Yes. The producer told me that the first show never goes perfectly, and I thought he was probably right. However, I just couldn't wait to find out what the viewers felt about it. I wasn't convinced I'd done everything brilliantly, but I was eager to get some feedback, even if it was negative.
You've done some live programmes, haven't you?
Yes, and it's tense because a million people see your mistakes. Once I stated a rule from physics, and it was later pointed out that it was wrong. I hadn't done my research properly. I still feel ashamed when I think of it. I also almost dropped some laboratory equipment once. Luckily, nobody noticed. And although I worry constantly about not remembering the next line of script, that hasn't happened yet.
What have you particularly enjoyed doing on the show?
So many things. I liked constructing that model volcano in the studio and seeing it erupt. Though a few things went wrong that day, actually. But if I had to come up with one thing, it'd be the robot we made and when it first started to move. I've done some things outside the studio too, like surfing a huge wave to demonstrate the laws of gravity. The problem was, I felt quite scared, though I tried to hide it.
Do you think the job of a science presenter on TV is important for society?
Presenters are like celebrities, really, but I don't think people necessarily look up to me. I'd like to think that after my shows, more children will go to university and do science subjects. It's hard to prove I have such an effect, to be honest. If people at home understand science better and realise its value, then my job is worthwhile. There's some evidence that programmes like mine can make that difference.
Thank you, Alex.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Today we're talking to Alex Costello, who's the presenter of a popular science programme for children. How did your career start, Alex?
Well, my first job was as a researcher for a science programme. One day I took the place of one of the presenters who wasn't feeling too good. I only had to speak for about a minute, but it went so smoothly I was asked to do more presenting. Most people don't get such a great opportunity until they've tried contacting several TV stations. My story was different. By the way, I actually had a friend who directed documentaries. However, I just wouldn't have felt comfortable asking her to get me a job.
Do you think you had some natural talent for what you do?
I'm not sure. Trying to get across scientific concepts to an audience is a challenge even for a top scientist. So I had to learn how to do it. Working on any TV programme also involves cooperating in a team, and that wasn't my strength, at least not initially. It's not that I'm short of enthusiasm, though. People have never been in any doubt about how I feel about science.
How are science programmes for children different from the ones for adults?
The differences between the types of programme are quite noticeable. It's often said children's presenters make their programmes very amusing. Science programmes for adults are also quite humorous at times. In children's programmes, you don't want the audience to get bored, so you pack a lot of different demonstrations and experiments into half an hour. Children are naturally curious about everything, so I certainly don't exclude any topics at all.
Do you write the scripts for your programmes?
Well, I know many presenters who don't mind reading someone else's words. They feel fed up if they have to produce a script. I'm different. I write a script and hand it over to the producer, who then suggests changes. It's a shame when sometimes the script comes back and I can hardly recognise it, especially because my scripts aren't done in a rush.
Do you remember your first TV show as the main presenter?
Yes. The producer told me that the first show never goes perfectly, and I thought he was probably right. However, I just couldn't wait to find out what the viewers felt about it. I wasn't convinced I'd done everything brilliantly, but I was eager to get some feedback, even if it was negative.
You've done some live programmes, haven't you?
Yes, and it's tense because a million people see your mistakes. Once I stated a rule from physics, and it was later pointed out that it was wrong. I hadn't done my research properly. I still feel ashamed when I think of it. I also almost dropped some laboratory equipment once. Luckily, nobody noticed. And although I worry constantly about not remembering the next line of script, that hasn't happened yet.
What have you particularly enjoyed doing on the show?
So many things. I liked constructing that model volcano in the studio and seeing it erupt. Though a few things went wrong that day, actually. But if I had to come up with one thing, it'd be the robot we made and when it first started to move. I've done some things outside the studio too, like surfing a huge wave to demonstrate the laws of gravity. The problem was, I felt quite scared, though I tried to hide it.
Do you think the job of a science presenter on TV is important for society?
Presenters are like celebrities, really, but I don't think people necessarily look up to me. I'd like to think that after my shows, more children will go to university and do science subjects. It's hard to prove I have such an effect, to be honest. If people at home understand science better and realise its value, then my job is worthwhile. There's some evidence that programmes like mine can make that difference.
Thank you, Alex.
That is the end of Exercise 4 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.